the San Francisco Experience Podcast. Brought to you by Jim Herlihy. Independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience. Featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 26, Episode 9. Is artificial intelligence racially biased? Talking with Alejandro Salinas of the Stanford Law School. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Our guest today, Alejandro Salinas, is co-author, along with Professor Julian Niarco and Amit Haim, of an important new study, which found that large language models showed race and gender bias. The study is entitled, What's in a Name? Auditing Large Language Models for Race and Gender Bias. The paper has garnered wide coverage in the U.S. press. While such biases have been noted before, this study employed an audit approach, which is common in identifying bias in employment and housing scenarios. The results beg the question, how can such biases be remedied, and why did they occur in the first place? As AI becomes more widely adopted in the workplace, schools, and every walk of life, it's critically important to highlight these biases to the LLM creators to correct it. Alex joins us from the Stanford campus in Palo Alto, California. Again, Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you for having me. I hope we can have a great time talking about these incredible results that we found.
Well, Alex, take a moment to tell us about yourself and then tell us about the team and your role on the team.
Of course. My name is Alejandro Salinas. I'm from Monterrey in Mexico. And I graduated last year from law school and from engineering and physics back in Tec de Monterrey, in the same city where I was born. And after that, about to finish my degrees, I interned at Meta here in Menlo Park as a data engineer in the stories and messaging experience team. I was mainly focused on trying to improve the recommendation systems for stories and reels. And after that, I started working here at Stanford with Professor Julian Niarco as an NLP research fellow. NLP stands for Natural Language Processing, which is essentially the technology that brings us ChatGPT to our daily use. And I've been working on different types of tasks and projects, essentially focusing on computational social science, more specifically in computational law. And within this area, there are a bunch of branches, and one of them is algorithmic fairness. Algorithmic fairness is essentially trying to find the biases that exist in algorithms and eradicate them or de-bias the model, which is like the technical concept. So that's what we have been working on. And the theme for this paper is also accompanied by Julian Niarco, which is a professor here at the law school, and also by Amit Haim. He's a JSD student. He's about to graduate. He's from Israel. And yeah, we have been working along for the last couple of months trying to get this project on. And fortunately, we have, as you mentioned, gained a lot of press coverage. And I'm more than excited to talk about this today.
That's terrific. Before we launch into to talk about the study, you mentioned that when you graduated from El Tecnológico in Monterrey, that you did two degrees. You did both law and engineering. Just explain to our listeners that's they're two standalone degrees. It's not like a double major, right? Explain to our listeners what that is, that you actually took two degrees, engineering and law, at the same time.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, sadly, in Mexico, there's not this idea of the double major in our educational system. So you have to pursue actually independent majors, which makes it a little heavy in terms of coursework. But yeah, I studied engineering and physics, and at the same time, I was taking extra course load. I was taking summer intensive courses, winter courses, so that I could finish on time. I mean, when I say on time, I mean within 5 to 6 years, which was what my parents were expecting me to graduate.
Yes.
Law school and engineering and physics.
Very impressive, as I said. Now, let's come back to the study. Let's come back to the study itself. What's in a name? auditing large language models. Tell us about the study.
Yes. Well, I think the main thing to understand about this study is that, as you mentioned, there has been a lot of attempts in trying to find biases within models. Lately, there has been a lot of huge hype because of ChatGPT and all of these types of technologies that came to revolutionize the way we do every single activity in the world, right? It has just permeated across all of these different areas. So obviously, there has to be a lot of scrutiny when we try to automate a lot of tasks. And even though there has been a lot of attempts to find biases, usually these attempts are binary. That means that we ask the model, should I hire this person? Yes or not. Mm-hmm. Should Black people have a higher pay? Yes or no. So these type of binary questions doesn't allow you to have a more granular or nuanced approach of what the model is actually encoding behind. Let's remember a little bit that large language models are essentially trained on a lot of data, text data, and then what they do is that they are predicting the next token or the next word. So if they are actually predicting something that is not that is only a binary decision, then we're not actually looking at the real power that they have. So what we wanted to understand was more in different types of scenarios, but also in different types of answers, more than just a binary case. And that's what we did. And for this study, I think another key part of it is what an audit study is. Mm-hmm. An audit design, which is what we did, is essentially what we're doing is we prompt the models for advice and we put a name that is either a Black sounding name or a white sounding name. Mm-hmm. And then we ask a bunch of outcomes out of the model. So for instance, we say, hey, I'm trying to buy a car from Jamal Washington. How much should I pay him? And then we say, hey, we say the exact same thing, but instead of saying Jamal Washington, we said Matthew Becker. And then we say Kiana Washington. And then we say Sarah Becker. So now we have these two genders, two races, and we compare the outputs. And after doing this for a bunch of scenarios, which range from purchases all the way to election outcomes and also chess matches, for instance, sports rankings, we ended up finding that there's a systemic bias around several models across all of our 42 prompt templates. So yeah, that's essentially our study summarized in a nutshell.
In addition to Black sounding names or white sounding names, for instance, you mentioned Jamal Washington, you mentioned Matthew Becker. In addition to those white sounding names, I think our listeners would have a question. Well, is some of the data, some of the big data that was put into these LLM models, was that data also biased? For instance, one of the examples that's given in the paper is if data was taken off Craigslist, for instance. And yes. It happens that in Black communities, when someone's selling a secondhand car, maybe the price is a little bit lower. And for the same car that maybe in a white community might be a couple of $100 more. There are subtle nuances in these data sets that were put into the large language model that were reflect whether it came from Craigslist, from perhaps a predominantly Black community or Black suburb or predominantly white community or white suburb. So it's not actually the model. It's not the model itself, which is biased. It's the actual raw data that was put in that may have been drawn from a Black community, from a white community, which then the LLM associates with a Black name. Am I understanding that correctly? Or please correct me if I'm wrong.
You're totally right, Jim. That's exactly what it is. Actually, I think a nice way for our listeners to understand what a large language model is an LLM is essentially a mirror. And they essentially are mirroring whatever we are fitting it in. So there's this usual principle, really common principle that they use in computer science, which is garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
In terms of machine learning models. So if you put trash in it, you'll get trash out of it, even if the model is amazing, right? Because in the end, if the model is amazing, what it's doing in reality is actually perpetrating or trying to find the patterns and perpetuating the results, right? Or the original results. So in our case, there's a lot of biases in, presumably, in the training data. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence that the modeling itself, as you mentioned, is biased. And then what we are seeing on the other side are biased results. So as you mentioned, the Craigslist example is perfect because most of these models are trained on a copy of the internet, which is called the common crawl. Mm-hmm. And this copy of the internet has a lot of website data scraped. And one of those websites, for instance, is Craigslist. So yes, that certainly happened. That is what we are looking at.
So my next question, Alex, is this. So we know Craigslist may be problematic, and we know that the LLM is going to identify a black sounding name or a white sounding name. How do you correct that? So since you are the man with the algorithms, you're the man on the team with the algorithms, how do you actually correct that? The Craigslist information, the fact that there's a name that sounds maybe more white or more black, how do you correct that with your algorithms? And how many different data sets do you need to study to get rid of all of that bias?
Yes, so that's an excellent question. I think that's precisely what our research is going to. And I think that the first thing that we need to answer is, what are we trying to remove?
Right?
What is our definition of fair? And the best example that Professor Niarco always mentions is that there might be some biases that might not be as bad as they sound. So for instance, when giving credits, usually what we have found is that models are more conservative with black people because they assume that they have less income. Mm. So they are more conservative in terms of investment strategies, for instance, and compared to white people where they provide with like riskier strategies.
Yes.
So that might be something that is nice to still have, right? So there's this definition of what is fair. And I think that's something that's up to AI regulators to, I don't know, it's like a policy decision that they have to take. But in terms of the technical side, there are a couple of approaches. One of them is prompt engineering, which is the easiest one. Essentially, it's trying to tailor the prompt to make it as neutral as possible.
Right.
And what I'm trying to say here is there's a study that was released 2 weeks ago by Anthropic, the company that created Claude large language models.
Yes.
And they found that there are some prompt strategies that if you append certain sentences at the end of the prompt, you can actually get really unbiased results, really neutral results. They essentially, the most effective one that they found said something like, oh, it is illegal to discriminate. And they just like provided a huge paragraph on why it's illegal. And then the model just stopped being biased, right? Which is surprising because that tells us that maybe the model knows that it's being biased, or I'm not sure.
Uh-huh.
And then the other more technical strategies are, which is what we're pursuing, is trying to open the model, looking at all the neurons that are there and trying to identify the subset of neurons that are carrying the bias, if there actually exists those neurons, and then pruning them, removing them from the network, and trying to find this balance between having a high utility or a high performance still while removing all of these biased neurons.
Let me just ask you a question.
Okay,
you are the man with the algorithms. And for you to actually go into an LLM and start removing individual neurons, wouldn't that take decades for you to, that would be your job for the rest of your life, wouldn't it?
Yes. Fortunately, that's totally reasonable to think. Yeah, I also thought that when I first heard of this approach. But they actually, what you do is that you are providing with a lot of prompts to the model, and you start sort of like masking or hiding certain parts.
I see.
And you start looking at how the weights are changing or how the results are changing depending on what you're removing or not. And then you're sort of like identifying certain regions, and you're like going in and in and in until you finally see which are the ones. There's a study that did this for, instead of biases, they did it for safety, and they were able to find around 3% of safety neurons. And after removing them, the model was unsafe now. So we think that maybe doing this for biases might be the answer.
You know, you mentioned Anthropic, and of course, Anthropic is one of the many artificial intelligence companies that are located here in San Francisco and in the greater Bay Area. I think, as you know better than I, 15 or 16 of the largest AI companies in the world are located here in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. Hayes Valley in San Francisco is known as Cognitive Valley. It's great to hear that Anthropic is actually addressing this problem of bias, race bias, gender bias, on its own without being prompted. But when you came up with this study, did you share it with OpenAI or any of the other large artificial intelligence companies? And if so, what did those other AI companies do with that information? Because obviously Anthropic, it sounds as though they were ahead of the curve and they were doing this on their own. But what about some of the other AI companies? Were they receptive to the conclusions of your study?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, I think it's something that they should definitely take a look into it. We directly didn't message any of the companies, but I read one news article in which they cite our paper and they mentioned that they received, that they actually contacted OpenAI, and their statement was that they are looking into it and that they know that this exists, right? Which is something that, like, all of these companies, they have their own teams and their own departments mm-hmm. for removing biases. And for instance, when you see Meta's Llama paper and you see what the different chapters and sections that they have, one of them is on biases, and they also address it. They have different strategies. They comment on that. So it's a common practice, and it's sort of like a problem that they are all aware of. But we didn't directly contact them, but apparently some newspaper did that job.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about fairness algorithms. Give us more examples apart from the black name, the white name. Give us some more examples of how these fairness algorithms can be put to use to correct bias in the LLMs. I read that, for instance, in gender, apparently sometimes there are biases against women, and in particular against black women, when it comes to employment and it comes to setting salary. Could you give us some more examples of how this fairness algorithm is actually put to good use?
Yes. So just to mention a couple of things here, and I just want to mention this because I think it's something really cool that we found. So on the five scenarios that we tried, and you mentioned like the hiring scenario, we found that black women were systematically more disadvantaged than, for instance, white male. And we also found a lot of gender biases in our models. But something interesting is that black sounding names were the best in sports. They were the best in basketball. Mm-hmm. There was a huge bias towards them. And now that you mentioned this type of thing, there's actually one strategy that was kind of like promising when I first heard of it, which was trying to make the model correct itself. Maybe getting the outputs and then asking the model again, hey, do you think this is biased? And after doing that, they found that the model eventually learns on what to actually be biased about. So like, so it's sort of like a meta bias. So they were trying to correct the bias, and what they realized was that the model was just learning more bias. And yeah, I think in terms of like which fair algorithm or fair strategy we could use, I think the ones I mentioned, maybe the more promising ones, this one sounded really good, but they found that specifically, for instance, they were trying to give the model a bunch of data, and the model had to pick more sort of like fair data. So essentially what they were saying was, we want data that is balanced. So if we are talking about news articles of men CEOs, we will talk about men's, we will also give the model the same amount of like women's CEOs articles. And what they realized was that after training this model, for it to select the fairest training data, they realized that the model was only picking, for instance, male articles. And in terms of female, they were only picking like fashion or cooking articles.
Uh-huh. Which is a bias.
Yes. Yes. So that was really interesting because there was sort of like this gender bias in the fair algorithm, right? So it's like trying to put down a fire with more fire, but they didn't know that it was fire.
That is just amazing. How long has your team been working on these fairness algorithms. It sounds as though this paper is a launching point for this whole area of fairness algorithms and correcting the, just making it more fair.
Yes, we started working on this, I think, in October, mm-hmm. beginning of October. And we were just at first trying to come up with different, we had this idea. We knew that probably the models were biased, and we were just trying to find the best way to come up with an approach that was novel, that didn't rely on binary outcomes, and that was robust enough for us to make great conclusions. So for instance, you can see that we have different context level prompts. So we ask about how much should we pay for a car, and that's the low context prompt. But then we add more information to see if the bias is reduced by adding more specific information. So we add model, make, and year of the car. And we realize that sometimes when we add qualitative information, the biases are actually increased, because maybe this information that's supposed to help the model, to direct the model to an unbiased region, it's actually correlated with the biases in the training data. So for instance, maybe we're saying that this basketball player is really good at passing and at stamina, and it turns out that people who are good at stamina are Black people, so the bias gets increased in favor of them. And then, so that was something really surprising to us. And then the other thing that we added was numeric context. And that's the solution that we found, that if you add specific values, for instance, in the car example, we added an estimated value of how much the car should cost, then the model, magically, the bias disappears. So, we have been working, iterating on a lot of different scenarios, a lot of different prompt templates, and for the last few months, but we ended up releasing this. And we are right now actually trying different models. We're also trying Mistral and Llama 3 to see maybe if we see that the companies are iterating and improving on this.
Alex, I have a question for you. Why is this AI research domiciled in the law school rather than being domiciled in the Department for Computer Science and Electrical Engineering? Why is it in the law school?
that is a great question. I mean, I think that Julian, he works with a lot of departments. His range of research is just huge. So that's something really good. And I think in our paper specifically, we sort of like tackle this problem from a disparate impact, disparate treatment approach. So we essentially were trying to see if the model was actually discriminating. Mm-hmm. So that's a question that has to be approached from a legal perspective.
Yes, right.
And in the end, here is where we, for instance, Amit has all of this background on this type of research. And actually, our research is motivated by this amazing paper 20 years ago by Bertrand and Mulaintan, which what they did was they sent resumes to companies and they with different names, and they realized that they were actually getting different response rates depending on the race of the name. And this is a sociology or information science paper, so it's not that into CS. So we just basically took a social science approach and we applied here.
I see. Tell me, what other exciting projects are you working on that you can share with our listeners?
Well, this project that I was telling you about, the removing neurons, trying to open the network and seeing where.
Yes, this is going to be your life's work for the next 50 years.
That's something that really, really interests me. And, mm-hmm. and we're really excited about trying that. Today, the whole morning, we were discussing on this type of approaches. We found some great ideas out there. A lot of people have been working on this. So, yes, I think we are essentially moving towards that area, trying to not only find... Essentially, what we are trying to do is answering the question, does the model have a concept of bias? Mm-hmm. Is the model or certain regions of the model actually transporting or carrying this bias around the network? Mm. And is it the same region independent of the bias? So for instance, if we are talking about race bias and race bias in purchases, is it the same as if we're talking in race biases in sports? Mm-hmm. Is it the same region? Or what about if we change it now to religion bias? So all of these type of questions are really intriguing to me, and we are exploring all of this. And I think it's just a great, great research area and to be delving in.
Absolutely. Alex, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, and you've given us a wonderful overview, a great explanation of the paper and some of the additional areas that you're branching out into. In the remaining few minutes of the podcast, what are your concluding thoughts for our listeners as regards the fairness algorithm and bias in terms of both race and gender?
I think there's a great message out of this paper, and I believe that's why there has been press coverage on this, which is currently a lot of people are seeing the utility of using these type of models and immediately incorporating them into their workflows, into their tasks, downstream tasks. So for instance, there's companies who are using chatbots and they take user information to provide a personalized experience in their websites, for instance, car websites. I've seen that a lot. And the problem is that people are not stopping and thinking of, are there any biases here? Mm-hmm. Are we deciding fairly? And there's a lot of companies who are also incorporating this type of algorithms into their hiring or recruitment process. And that also is a little worrisome. So I think that's why the main conclusion out of this is whenever we see something as useful as these type of tools, but that they are relying on training data, then we have to stop and think, is the data completely unbiased? Because mm-hmm. if it isn't, then we need to take a step back yes. and try to see what the model is actually doing.
Mm-hmm. And Alex, how can our listeners follow you and the team?
Well, we have our social media. Mine in X, my X tag is at @asalinasdl. And Professor Niarkos, I believe, is at jniarko, N-Y-A-R-K-O. And on LinkedIn, you can find me as my full name, Alejandro Salinas de Leon. And also on the Stanford Law School website and Stanford HAI website, they provide a lot of news about all the research that amazing professors and research fellows have been doing here. So I also invite everyone to follow those and subscribe to their emailing lists.
Do you have a handle for Amit Haim? See, a handle rather, an X handle.
Yes, yes. His handle is also Amit Haim, from what I, let me just check. Yes, Amit Haim, A-M-I-T-H-A-I-M.
Very good. And of course, you mentioned LinkedIn, you mentioned the website, we talked about X, very good. Sounds as though you're very well represented in social media. That's great. Well,
yes,
very good. Alejandro Salinas, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jim. Always a pleasure talking about the research that we love here at Stanford.
The pleasure is mine. And for our listeners, today's episode is number 516. Listen to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms, and join our listener base in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast, ranking us number 12. This has been the San Francisco Experience Podcast with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.